horse lovers, this is the Heart Horse Podcast. We're coming to you from the Heart Horse headquarters in LA, California, with hosts Charlotte and Tisa.
On today's episode, we are talking to our dear friend, fine artist and horse lover, Claire Stringer. Welcome, Claire.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be chatting with you guys.
We're so happy you could be here.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. So I met Claire at A Little Rescue, which we've talked a lot about. We love A Little Rescue very dearly. But Claire, do you want to talk about that experience and how we kind of met?
Yeah, I heard of A Little Rescue through Mosey Truitt's podcast, In the Spirit of Horse, and I got so excited that to hear about the way that Frida works with horses and to go volunteer there. So I think maybe Tista, did I first meet you at the clinic that Frida did?
Yeah.
And when Frida was saying, oh, I'm so happy Rue has a new human friend, and it's Tista. I was like, well, Tista must be special.
I am. Just kidding. Rue's amazing. She's really wonderful. She was ready for a friend, I think. She was ready for, like, some new people to hang out with her.
And yeah.
I didn't realize you and Rue had a special connection.
I mean... Yeah, she was like cool with me.
Yeah,
you know, Rue's like, she's very special horse. She's been through, like, clearly a lot in her past, but she's just very particular about what she likes and not. And I think she was very accepting of me, which was sweet for me being a volunteer there. But I had time to get to know her too. That's always helpful.
Yeah.
And Claire, you and I met at, again through Mosey Truitt, at the summit.
Yeah.
That she held in Ojai in 2019. And that's where I met both of you.
Yeah.
And that was so special.
Yeah, it was so exciting. Once again, like, I just feel so blessed to have this community in Los Angeles, you know, hearing people say, oh, well, I'm in LA, and being able to access the
I actually remember that moment. I think it was when Cassandra from
Reflective Horse.
We were all standing in a circle in an exercise she was leading, and everybody was saying where they were from, and also if they were a wild horse, where would you run free?
I remember that.
I remember being maybe you were having like a break from the sun. It was super
hot. Yeah, we were out in the
I just remember being so excited. No, I'm pretty sure you were there, because I remember being so excited to hear a couple of voices saying, I'm from Los Angeles. And I was so just like, oh my God, these are going to be my friends.
Yes.
Like, it's real. I can take this home with me. You know, there are people near me that feel this way.
Yeah.
And we never stopped hanging out.
Here we are. Goals. Goals fulfilled.
Yes. So tell us, you know, I've never really gotten to ask you about your history with horses and, you know, when you feel like that started and how it's been unfolding for you.
Well, I grew up in South Carolina, and I was very blessed to live walking distance from a barn and equestrian stables. And actually, I think the first time that I was there and I was around the horses was because my sister, my big sister, shout out to Lauren, was a gymnast, and she did a vaulting program with the horses at the stable.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that might have been the first time that I was really around horses. Mm-hmm. I don't even remember, because I was really little at the time. But so I think eventually, you know, I loved horses, but eventually I took lessons for a while when I was probably like 9 or so. And I was getting ready to learn how to jump, and I just, something about it, I don't know whether it just, it wasn't really a conscious thing, but I just kind of, like, I thought I'd take a break for the winter, but I didn't go back. And looking back, I think, you know, especially getting to know that, you know, really heart and relationship centered kind of way of being with horses, I think that's part of what always kept me at sort of arm's length from horses was really, I didn't have a horse and I didn't have the ability to build that personal relationship. And so just taking riding lessons, which I did, again, you know, kind of did it sporadically throughout my life. After South Carolina, I lived in New York City, and I took lessons for a while in Prospect Park.
Wow, you did?
Yeah, it was, I went on a trail ride in Prospect Park, and this woman came dashing through with two students that were with her, trotting through and, like, jumping over a stream, and she was like, "You get back there!" You know, she was, like, yelling at them, but with total love, you know? And I just was like, I want to take lessons with that woman.
Oh, my gosh, Clara, that's so funny. You know, did I ever tell you I used to live right next to Prospect Park?
No.
In Windsor Terrace. And I used to walk through there and see the people riding and taking lessons from that riding school.
Wow. Yeah.
That's so interesting.
Well, that was a... it was kind of a pivotal moment for me with horses because there was just... It was almost like a horse... epiphany that I had, even though I was just doing group lessons, and I thought that actually the quote unquote barn where the horses live, which just seemed to be kind of a converted concrete warehouse space, was really, really sad.
Yeah.
I felt so sad for the horses, but glad that, you know, they got to get out and go through the park every day.
Yeah. I mean, for those who don't know Prospect Park in Brooklyn, it's phenomenal. I believe it was designed by the same person who designed Central Park. And as the story goes, it was designed after Central Park and all of the mistakes that the architect felt that they had made in Central Park, they corrected and made their real dream happen in Prospect Park. And it feels that way. I mean, that used to be such a refuge for me when I lived in New York and in all seasons.
What year was this that you guys were living there?
I moved, oh gosh, when were you there?
I was there, I actually moved to New York September 1st of 2001.
You did not.
Yes, I did.
Oh, geez.
Wow.
Yeah. Very intense times. Yeah. And then I left, January of 2008. So it was I moved there right before one major crisis and then left right before the next major crisis.
Wow, that's so intense.
It was really, really intense, but it really, really bonded me to the city in a special way and in a way I felt like just grateful that I was there also at that time, as crazy and sad and scary as it was.
Were you, had you found the horses right when you moved there, or was it a little while after?
Not at all, actually. I lived in New York for 6 years, and I probably had been there at least 3 or 4 years before I started doing that, taking lessons. But yeah, I had this moment when, after a lesson, and I had led the horse that I was riding back to the barn, and I was standing there just holding the horse, and someone was asking me about horses or something, and I just felt this feeling that I would associate with feeling grounded, but I think of that song, a natural woman. I was like, I feel like a natural woman with horses, you know, that I just, that feeling of being connected with nature and being really comfortable in your own skin. And so I think when in moments after that, when I felt like I needed that, and I asked myself, what do I need? What would I really like to have? And especially, I rode just a tiny bit when I moved out to Santa Cruz, and I got introduced to Western riding that way, and I really liked it. And then when I moved down to LA, I remember thinking, what did I do in a way, because Santa Cruz is kind of this coastal heaven, and I came here because I'm an artist and I just felt like I wanted to be back in a metropolitan place with the museums and galleries and fellow artists. And so I thought I need to, you know, volunteer with horses again. And I always was really interested in horse therapy work and equine facilitated learning. So I found a rescue to volunteer at, but yeah, that's kind of that moment in New York by Prospect Park is a touchstone for me of like just feeling relaxed and good with myself. And I think that's part of that kind of addictive quality of being with horses.
I can really see you right there. And that's such a unique perspective. I think that a lot of people maybe have that touchstone happen, certainly not in such a metropolitan area, in an urban environment. And that's really, it's super interesting now that yet again, you find yourself in an urban environment and are seeking horses now.
Yeah. I think, I like to have kind of crazy, I mean, I get really inspired and excited about, you know, certain ideas. And there's some things in life that I think like, well, that's really weird or far-fetched, but you think like, why not? Something that really inspires me is the idea of how we can reincorporate horses into our lives more. You know, they used to be our primary mode of transportation and also used for farm work and all, you know, just all the parts of human history that horses have been a part of. And so I love, you know, when I lived in outside of Santa Cruz, there was actually a biker bar that was really fabulous. It's called Monty's Log Cabin, and I hope it's still there, because it's just this, it's literally a log cabin in the mountains, and it has a hitching post out front. And people would, you know, ride their horses through the park, and they would ride and like hitch up their horse and go have a drink. And I just thought that was the coolest thing. That was another like life goal aspiration. Totally. I was just like, I want to be able to just hang out with my horse and go somewhere. So I love seeing like Tisto, how you grew up and were able to have Juno at your home in Burbank, and like that there's that whole equestrian neighborhood and it's just adjacent to Griffith where you can go on the trails.
So you can go to the cantina and like hitch and go
food. I still have never done that, but that was
so mind-boggling to me as well. And it's interesting now, I've never really put this together before this moment, but how different, you know, we can have such deep love, of course, for our horses that we talk about here, but also, you know, dogs or cats who we also love, who are part of our family in the same way, but we get to have these more, a lot more experiences with those animals on our turf than we do with horses, of course, by nature of the species. And so it's always like this really, it's sort of like surprising and amazing when you see those two things intertwine, like even when we were all together, actually it was the three of us who on the last podcast episode we talked about the Compton Peace Walk, and that is another example of seeing like horses in a scenario where you don't normally see them. They're usually like a really human experience, and I think everybody is really moved by that,
which is so interesting because it's what, I mean, how many, like 100 just plus a little bit years ago, that was like that was actually extremely common. Horses were everywhere.
Oh my gosh, absolutely.
Yeah, it wasn't in human history. It was very, just the post-industrial
and I mean,
world without horses.
Right. And I don't know if you felt this way, but Claire and I actually went to the same college in Savannah, Georgia.
Yes.
The same art school.
Yes.
And you know, they have a lot of working horses who draw carriages through the city.
Also, and, like, New York.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And it's very, you know, you're in this sort of time warp where it's very easy there. And I mean, Savannah is so much about its history. Mm-hmm. That's like, the, yes. you're there and it's all like, you might as well be 200 years back. So
for better or worse.
Exactly. Exactly. Very good point. And yeah, it's really easy to see what it was like when horses mm-hmm. were, you know, such a more common staple in people's day to day.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, something I liked about our friendship, Claire, and getting to know you is that you, like, have a toe in the horse world, but you haven't, like, put a whole foot in. So it's actually been really nice to have you as a friend, like, bring you along. Like, we went to the Western States Horse Expo together mm-hmm. and, like, get your perspective on things, because you're not someone who's been, I don't want to say indoctrinated because it sounds so intense, but, like, but, yeah. whatever word is the kinder version of that, where it's just that you, like, you know, that you haven't lived your whole life, like, in that culture. So it's really fun to bring you along and, like, have your perspective as someone who's, you know, very interested in history and stuff, too. And yeah, I always appreciate your comments.
Oh, thank you.
Those areas. And, yeah.
I very much have a beginner's mind about it, because I am just always full of questions about horses and about horsemanship and how people do things and what is that and what does that mean.
Mm-hmm. So do you feel like you could say, like, what if you could distill, like, what draws you to horses in, like, a line, or like, what do you think is the thing that draws you to them?
I think that
I know.
Yeah. What I think that's very, I think it's a great question, because I think it is such a ephemeral, intangible kind of thing.
Totally.
That I guess I would go back to, like, that moment by Prospect Park, because I think it's a really interesting thing how horses can kind of help you feel the best part of being alive mm-hmm. in that, you know, the way that they are also very social creatures, but how different they are from humans. You know, there's such this large, just beautiful, fascinating, very different creature, and the kind of understanding and relationship that you can feel with the horse, and this kind of just, like,
sorry, we're having, like, dog fighting outside somehow. I don't know what's going on.
I'm gonna pause for a second. Okay, we're back. We solved dog drama.
Alrighty. Anyway, do you remember what we were saying before that?
I think so. Yeah. The horses. It's interesting because I felt very, like, that the world of the horse was something very opaque to me that I think pulled me away from continuing lessons, because I felt like, what is my relationship to this being? You know, that you know, you learn, like, you're supposed to be the boss and you're the leader and you're in charge and, like, don't let them get away with this and all this kind of stuff, and it just, that's not very my personality. So actually, it's funny, because I told myself when I came back to horses in California and wanting to spend more time with them, and even just a couple years ago, I mean, like, 1 year ago, mm-hmm. When I decided to start taking riding lessons again, I told myself, oh, it will be good for me to learn to assert myself and speak up and take charge. And it's fascinating, because then as I connected to, like, in the spirit of horse and Mosey Tritt and, like, the whole, you know, just some people that I found online, Jeannie Patel with Listen to Your Horse, and started learning more, and a little rescue, and after the summit and everything, I just took a whole 180. Like, oh, that's not what horses are to me at all. That's not how I want to relate to horses at all. And it actually became a total journey into myself, learning more about horses and what life is for them, what horses need, you know, like, yes, they need food, water, they need not really shelter, but that they need herd, you know, that they need that social aspect and the kind of things that, that horses can experience in their relationship to humans, and the things that you find when you start letting the horse have a voice and really having that dynamic back and forth relationship with the horse, that just, you know, flipped everything upside down that I that I felt like I intuitively knew, but the more that I really learned about horses and learned more science-based and contemporary research about horses, it just opened up so much. And I found myself, like, the emotional states I was in, rather than saying like, oh, I need to be in charge, it was more like, I need to have my voice and I need to speak my truth, you know? So I think that, you know, the things that there was that kind of magical unknown quality that drew me to horses and just their beauty. And I think that, but that also became like, as I started drawing horses and the same time, like really developing more relationship and deciding like, you know, I've really focused on drawing people in my art, and now I want to include horses as well. And how really, really challenging that is, because, you know, horses are so anatomically different, and they're so anatomically mysterious, and there's so many different parts, and they all have names, and like, I can't remember
that. I know, yeah. I can't even remember all the names.
Something, I know this isn't a part of the horse, but Claire, you and I were wondering earlier, what is the difference between a knicker and a wicker?
Do you know? Yeah, I don't think there necessarily is one. It's probably like a cultural thing.
Regional... I was like, maybe one is British.
A wicker.
I was wondering maybe if it had to do with the tone of the delivery on the horse's part.
Hi.
More tenor. I'm trying to think, like, if I feel like that, like, when... I guess like a wicker to me is like kind of lower, like,
that's what like I thought too.
Or knicker's like,
yes, that's what I think too. I wonder if we're right.
Okay, well, if you know, you can DM us or
please respond to this podcast. Yeah. Difference between a wicker and a knicker.
We'll be here with you. And making horse noises and chill.
So tell us more about your art and how. Yeah, incorporating horses into your art has been different for you or changed things for you.
Yeah, I think expressing the emotional qualities associated with, you know, learning about horses and the ability to really develop that relationship with them definitely shaped, like, you know, taking it on, because it was hard. Like I was saying, you know, to having the beginner's mind about horsemanship and feeling like, oh, is this a dumb question kind of thing? And it was hard. Like, you know, I've been painting and drawing for a long time, and I pride myself in my drawing skills, like, you know, to a certain level. I went to art school and all that. But then, like, drawing horses is so new, and allowing myself to be really wonky and bad at it.
Yes.
It was hard, you know? But to, you know, just let myself be like, okay, if I draw bad horses, like, all right, you know, just... And with drawing, like, you know, I went onto YouTube videos to try to find, like, good YouTube videos, like, well, how do you draw a horse? Because actually at the rescue where I volunteered, the therapy center where I volunteered previously, they were really sweet, and they always said, you know, if you ever want to come, draw the horses, because sometimes I would just come draw.
That's nice.
And so it was really fun, but they were just awful. I wrote under one of them, like, they have a fjord horse that I wrote, like, Huffalo under it because it looks like a horse buffalo, you know?
Huffalo.
It's a little Huffalo.
I made her a Huffalo.
I'm glad that the Huffalo exists.
I know. I think we need to post. Do you have the Huffalo?
Yeah. Oh, it's in my sketchbook. Yeah, you can definitely post my Huffalo. Because then I did get a good one of her, but it was so fun, but I was just like, I have to learn, you know, the anatomy. There's so many underlying parts, and actually, I was telling Charlotte today, I did just get a wooden artist, the mannequin, a little horse mannequin.
That's so cool.
Yeah, so look out for that in the future.
I'm really excited to see what you'll do with that.
Yeah.
Can I ask you about a specific piece of yours?
Of course.
I love, if you visit Claire's Instagram, you can see it there. I think your Instagram's at Claire Stringer, right?
It's actually at Claire K. Stringer.
Okay, perfect.
And good, so is my website, yeah.
You have that piece that's part of your purple series. Mm-hmm. I'll deem it that. I don't know if that's how you call it. Yes. But I love seeing you, you know, I can see incredible examples where you nail equine anatomy. And then it's so cool to see how you progress to playing with equine anatomy. And the piece I'm thinking of is where there's a nude woman, mm-hmm. like sitting almost in the middle, and the horse's so long, and the back is sweet. It's so intriguing and amazing and surreal, and like, I just want to know what you think about that, what you feel about that piece.
Thank you so much. And I want to say, like, I think for people listening, and especially people who work with their horses in different ways, and have that, you know, kind of anxiety at the barn or like getting judgment or whatever. And like, you know, that's something that comes up for me a lot with my artwork and things like that piece that are intensely emotional. I would feel like, you know, and it has nudity, you know, and of course, like, nudity is the most classical thing you have, but, you know, just feeling like, oh my gosh, this is really vulnerable. And how with that piece, I was very nervous for anyone to see it. And that's something that that's a, you know, kind of a challenge with my art, is like when something's so personal, I'm like, no one can know. But I've had incredible experiences where just, you know, I feel like something is just like too crazy. What are people gonna think of me? But, when people saw that piece, when friends saw it, they had such a response to it, and they just loved it. And I thought, like, oh, this, you know, sometimes I'll paint things and think like, oh, it's too depressing, you know, but people don't necessarily, that's one of the wonderful things about art, you know, people don't necessarily receive it that way, mm-hmm. or that it speaks to them and it can feel soul healing. It's not like, you're hurting me with your depressing painting, you know?
And that's has such an interesting, what you're saying there, such a beautiful full circle to, again, that touchstone moment in Prospect Park where, like, you're just feeling like a natural woman that that experience contains depression and joy and the full spectrum of human experience, and being able to be vulnerable in that and truthful in that. And like you were saying, that horses encourage you to speak your truth, mm-hmm. and how beautiful to see you like finding your footing and being really exposed.
Yeah.
And have that, I mean, that's that piece, you know, I guess I couldn't be surprised to hear that that was a hard one for you to share, but it's definitely one that resonated so much with me. And like, I love that piece and I think about it all the time. And if someone were to say, like, show me amazing equestrian artist, you know, I would show them that piece. So I
thank you so much. It's one of those things where I almost am like surprised at myself that I was able to draw the horse like that, because I guess that's one of those just kind of like art magic moments. Or I've actually been learning more about it scientifically, because there's a book called Drawing on the Right Side of the Brain. Mm. And it has, I think maybe it's actually a psychologist that wrote it, but it has a lot of the science.
Is it about like the right as in right left or right as in correct?
Right as in right left.
Okay.
Great question. Yes. So it's talks about, because especially for people who are right hand dominant, mm-hmm. then their left brain hemisphere is dominant. And that is what contains all your linear functioning, verbal, writing, logic, right. all of that stuff.
And I know, but you're left-handed.
I am left-handed. And actually, this was one of the coolest things in the book, is that I found out that it said, like, all the exercises in the book are basically, you know, it's most people are right-handed and they're geared towards that. But even if you're left-handed, it's fine. Do the exercises as they're written. Except if you're left-handed and your mother is also left-handed, then you need to reverse what
the exercises are written.
Yes, my mom is also left-handed.
Wow. Weird.
Yeah. So I feel like I am especially right-brained, which is great for drawing. So that's like a biological benefit I have for drawing. But it's kind of one of those things where it's like, yeah, the more that you can get into the right brain and that you're just in that kind of like spatial,
all the
amorphous, like, spatial,
all the ooey gooey good stuff.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I definitely was in some, you know, right brain space with that. But I think too, like, I think more and more, like, a lot of times that I feel like the best images I have just pop into my head fully formed. A lot of times it'll be right when I first wake up, I'll just get this image. Mm-hmm. And it's really cool, but it's kind of frustrating because it's not like it happens every day, you know? It's a bit of a rare occurrence, but that image is something that just popped into my, you know, field of internal vision one morning. And that's very right brain too. Like that book is geared towards helping people just think more creatively, for anything, for more creative problem solving. It's not like necessarily become an artist, but it's for anyone who wants to be able to function more creatively and have that kind of broad, big picture, right brain thinking. But the image, to me, it's kind of like when I get those images that pop into my mind, then it's really interesting to deconstruct them. Like, well, what does that mean? And what does that mean to me? And that particular image, you know, I think that the woman and the horse are really kind of both representations of sort of a human experience, a human and a horse experience sort of interchangeably, like that the, you know, the horse is completely, on one hand you'd say, like, if it was a real horse, you'd be like, well, this horse's back is broken, you know,
it's spineless.
It's like spineless. Yeah. It's sagging on the ground, like it's rubber or something. Yeah. But the horse is making this high stepping movement and it has this kind of expression like, well, I'll just keep going. And so I was thinking a lot about the, in my recent works, I've thought a lot about the correlation between horses and horse experience as well as women and particularly sort of what we would consider, you know, either woman's experience or feminine qualities and feminine energies. And so, yeah, just identifying with that kind of, like, on one hand, there's like part of it that's like breaking down, like the woman, you know, yeah. what's going on with her is like, she looks to be in some kind of grief or anguish or something. And, but the horse is kind of carrying on. And so, yeah, there's, I don't know, with that piece, there was a lot of things that I thought, like, wow, I mean, it did. It just kind of popped into my mind, but it had a lot of meaning to me with what I have been experiencing personally and what I had learned about horses. And actually, again, Mosey in one of her podcasts really articulated something that I paused it and then I wrote down the whole passage of how she articulated the correlation between like how women historically have been so, their value has been so much focused on beauty, their beauty, their form, their value, as well as with horses or with women like childbearing or
former function,
exactly.
Yeah.
And she articulated that so perfectly and was like, yes, that's what I guess. That's what it is. So that piece is kind of the first place I was really exploring that in my art.
Wow. Very cool.
Wow. I wish I had that piece right in front of me right now because I'm just like...
Well, I'm working on making prints of it available. Awesome. A couple of people have asked me for prints, so I just have to reconnect with, like, the print house and everything. So.
Cool. That's super
could be a reality.
Exciting.
Yeah.
Right?
I love that topic, too. I feel like that's a whole other podcast episode, but, like, yeah, women and horses. So
yes.
much to talk about. That's basically
so much
why we started this
yes.
company.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know we're keeping you longer, but I wanted to ask you, you know, you were talking a little bit about how things sort of come to you first thing in the morning, and we've talked about dreams a lot. And it's so wonderful to find that natural inspiration. But what do you do to stay motivated or find inspiration when that isn't just flowing? Because I think that's something that we all find ourselves in, whether that's art or horsemanship. And there are moments where we can get really stuck or just are waiting for this light bulb moment.
Yeah.
And I wonder what you, how you like cultivate that or bide your time or what do you do?
Yeah, that's great. I believe in work ethic a lot, and I believe that's a weak spot for me. Loving self-discipline. I think that just creating the space for something to happen, I mean, not just creating the space, but actually doing something. So I know that just drawing anything,
yeah,
creates more of that. I actually, one of my really good friends from art school had encouraged me to start doing a daily drawing, which is something that I hear a lot, like, do a daily drawing, and it always sounds like a good idea, but I'm kind of afraid to commit because then what if I fall off the wagon and then what will I do, you know? And I started doing the daily drawings, and then I had been doing that. I committed to doing a week, and I did the week, and it, at some point towards the end of that, I had a really, really weird vision, morning vision, that I was like, you know, just another one of those, like, I can never, you know, I'm never going to show any of them up to this, you know? And so I drew it and I sent the picture to my friend and I said, what are you doing to my brain? But I really believe in the, you know, when you look at truly great artists and probably anyone who's extremely successful, you just see their dedication and they're just showing up for it consistently. And as much as you can, you know, I'm not going to have a morning vision or make a masterpiece every day, but my phrase for myself is when I draw, I win.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's really great.
That's my little mantra whenever I start to... the self-critic starts to come up, like, what is this? You should be able to draw better than this. Like, what are you doing? This looks terrible. And I go, when I draw, I win. So I'm winning.
I love that. I think that's so relevant, too, with how we feel about our horses. Like, just if you, like, I don't know, if you show up, you win. Like, you get to the barn, you're winning.
Yeah,
like, great.
Yeah, absolutely.
You fulfill, you check the box. Like, you're there. Whatever happens, you're
today,
there. Yeah.
I'm already winning.
Already winning.
I could win more, but I'm already winning.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
I love that.
That's so beautiful. Thanks for sharing so much with us, Claire.
Oh,
thank
you
so
much.
Vulnerable and sharing all the, like, amazingness that goes on in your wonderful right-sided brain.
Anytime, Charlotte. You need a right brain check at any time. I'm here for that.
Well, Claire, do you want to tell everyone how they can get in touch with you if they'd like to follow you? Or
Yes. I'm most active on Instagram. You can find me at Claire K. Stringer. That's C-L-A-I-R-E. K as in Catherine, Stringer, S-T-R-I-N-G-E-R. And my website is also the same, ClaireKStringer.com.
.com. Awesome.
Love it. Thank you, Claire. Thanks for being our friend. Thanks
Thank
for being you. On our podcast.
Yeah, Thank you for you. Being my beautiful first friend.
Heart Horse is the monthly subscription for women whose hearts belong to their horses. To learn more about our subscription boxes and exclusive online community, visit us at hearthorsebox.com. And be sure to stay connected with us on Instagram at hearthorsebox.